This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, look, we've all heard inflation's up 8% as of this broadcast, but when you walk through the grocery store and you sit at a restaurant, it sure seems like it's a lot higher. Don't you agree? As prices continue to jump, what are we doing as an industry to adjust? And why are so many shop owners reluctant to raise their labor rates? Carm here, your pioneer of automotive aftermarket podcast and your facilitator of wisdom. My panel includes two shop owners and an auto shop bookkeeper with a wide open discussion about labor rates, parts pricing, and even employee retention in the age of rampant inflation. Hey, thanks to our partners, Shopware and Broadly, for providing you this episode. You know, nothing personal, but your customers don't want to hear your voice. They want a text telling them what's up and when they get their wheels back. Make communication easy with cloud-based software that allows customers to pay their bill quicker. On the web, talk to my friends at GetShopware.com. Hey, are you missing out on customers who call the shop during off hours? Well, with Broadly's web chat feature, customers can get the answers they need even when you're not in the shop. My friends over at Broadly, talk to them at getbroadly.com/chat. Well, let's look at this great panel. I mean, are you kidding me? You could be on the national TV programs talking about inflation. I'm positive of it. With me, we'll start with a lady first, Natalie Paris, Three Rivers Bookkeeping. She's a profit strategist. She's been working in the industry for years. And she's a bookkeeper for many great shop companies out there, from Talkeetna, Alaska. Did I say that right?
Talkeetna, pretty close.
Talkeetna, Alaska. From Alaska, what is it, like 5 o'clock in the morning there or something?
It's 9 o'clock.
Good to have you here, Natalie. Great to see you. Dave Kuss is with us from Auto Trend Diagnostics, Campbell, California, past president of ASCCA and part-time coach for the ACT Group.
Hi, Carm.
Thank you, Dave. Good to have you here. And Dustin Brown from Brown Auto Experts, 3 locations in New Mexico, Albuquerque, in the village of Los Ranchos, and Rio Rancho. Did I say that right?
That's it. Yeah. So I guess sounds like an old John Wayne Western, you know?
Yes, it does. Can I stand up and do my John Wayne walk for you all? Thank you.
Yes, please do. Please do.
Thank you for bringing that. Hey, look at everyone. These are my takeaways for this great, important topic. Listen, I wouldn't have this if I didn't think it would be important. Are we paying attention to rising prices? Have you been to the supermarket lately? And let me tell you what I've noticed. Shrinkflation, meaning that this product that we had always purchased for $3 on the shelf, if you look carefully, it's probably smaller than it ever was before, meaning that they're putting less product in the thing that we feel we're still, well, wait a minute, the prices didn't go up. There's less product. Did you ever buy a can of nuts? Remember how big they used to be, like a number 10 can? And now for the same price, it's half the size. And that's called, and in fact, I read about that recently, it's called shrinkflation. I read an article, Target's top wage in certain big metropolitan cities for startup people is $24 an hour. Just let that sink in for a minute. And then how do we afford our people? Because they're getting hit hard also. I'll bet you that every single technician and service advisor in your place keeps thinking, when can I sit down with Dave or Dustin and just chat with them about the pressure that we are feeling? And yeah, I know that you like to give us a raise every spring, but can you do it a little early? I mean, they're just trying to figure out how to have that dialogue with you. And I think it's important to do a show like this so that we can get smarter and learn to have a dialogue with our people. A couple of other things. Wages are up 5.1%. Inflation's up 7.9%. All this is from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and inflation's at a 40-year high. How could we not pay attention to how all of that is affecting our business? Dustin, I want to go to you. It seems to me that the way to overcome our increased costs is through our labor rate.
I would agree. There's not a... If you're running a healthy matrix on your parts, a lot of that's going to take care of itself, right? If you've got it in your system, the matrix hits. But what we can control is our labor rate. I would encourage you to stay on top of your competitors and see where they're at. And I looked at, we recently surveyed the dealerships in our area and found they're all labor rate starting at 150 an hour in our area, and we were at the time at 119. So we quickly went to 129. We might adjust it even more after that. So look at the people that have resources. Look at your dealerships, your big chains. They have the resources to really kind of invest in research and develop and to what their labor rate needs to be to adapt. And that's where you're going to get some more leeway to help with your employees. Because you're absolutely right, Carmen. The employees are feeling it. They talk about 8% inflation. Ask your technician, hey, what used to cost $100 at the grocery store, is it 108 now? No, it's like 150, right? I don't know where they get this 8% number from.
You're absolutely right. I mean, God help it if you enjoy an occasional filet mignon. You have to save for that today, it seems to me. Right? Hey, throw that loose coin in the filet mignon jar. It almost seems to me it's up like 25 or 30%. And you're right. I'm not sure where they're getting that number from. I had a call recently, and I think, and again, I get so many calls every day, and we do so much production, but I think it was Matt Fonslow, who has a podcast on the Aftermarket Radio Network, and he's the shop foreman and head diagnostician out in Minnesota. And he said, you know, Carm, we've never gotten more calls from local shops talking about labor rates. So to your point, Dustin, Matt was fielding a lot of calls, and they weren't bashful to tell him what their basic door rate was. And you could hear the phone thud and the person fall over at the other end because they're the highest price in town. And the reason is they got almost every OE tool, a lot of great people, a big company. They're not afraid to charge for what they know they're giving, you know, 110% back to their customer, even if it's from a local shop who's sending them a problem vehicle. Why do we need to pick up the phone, Dave, and just ask the guy down the road to Dustin's point? Shouldn't we be just setting our labor rate based on what we know our costs are?
I mean, Dustin is right in the respect that paying attention to what the competitors are charging is important, right? We do have to be competitive, but I see nothing wrong with being the most expensive shop in town as long as you can deliver that value to your client, right? We don't get questioned much on labor rates at all as far as pricing goes. And I'm sure we're the highest priced labor area in the country. So in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, San Jose area. So, but to your point, yes, I describe it as building it backwards. You have to look at your expenses, right? What are your expenses? And then build it backwards from there on what you need to charge for your labor. You'll find you're probably underpriced if you do that, right? If you're paying attention to gross profits overall and gross profit on labor, you'll find you're probably not charging enough.
You just nailed it. And I think it's the second time within 30 days that I've heard build it backwards. And Natalie, maybe you can chime in on this. I want to make X. And if it's 8%, if it's 15%, whatever the net operating income of your company, you shouldn't be bashful. This isn't a hobby. You've got your lifeblood, all your investment, all your money. I mean, this is your business. Don't let someone else tell you how it should run. And you should be proud to make a profit. Profit is not an ugly word. And so where are these formulas? I mean, I'd love to be able to post it in this episode of, you know, basically, and it's not hard to do, yellow pad, calculator. Natalie, you could probably sit down with a client and say, what should my labor rate be based on me making 12% net operating income? Natalie, probably you can do that in a half hour.
Yeah, I mean, we look at, you know, what are they bringing in, labor costs versus labor income. And then we also look at those expenses and break it down to see how much it's affecting your overall, you know, labor margin. And it's true. A lot of people are underpriced, and we've had a lot of our shops who have increased their labor rate significantly because of just kind of looking at it as a more of a micro level instead of a whole company macro level. And it's kind of eye-opening.
Dave, I'm sure you're sitting down with clients and even Dustin and taking a look at that pricing matrix, the margin on parts. Is there room there for a point or two?
Always. So as an industry, we have a fear, unfounded fear mostly of charging a correct amount for parts, right? And, you know, I like to see 55 to 60% gross profit on parts, closer to 60 as possible, right? You know, a lot of shops, they are using a lot of manufacturing factory parts, right? So, you know, and then, so you don't get that that discount you would on the aftermarket side of it. But we fear that somebody's going to make a phone call to the dealer and say, hey, you know, how much for A? And they're going to find out that the over-the-counter price is, you know, $150 for that alternator. But, you know, the shop charged me $250 for that alternator. Well, it carries warranty, right? There's value in that part that I buy and install on your vehicle. And I need to make that margin. Otherwise, I won't be here to warranty it, right? So when we're circling back to that inflation question, the downside to a labor matrix is there's gaps in that matrix. So, you know, where the less expensive the part, the higher the margin is going to be on the part, right? So if that part you buy every day jumps from, say, your second level on your matrix to your third level on your matrix, all of a sudden you're not making that GP anymore, right? That gross profit percentage is going to drop. So we have to watch that in when the inflation comes with parts. Shopware is a great example of their optimizer, where it's much more precise. You don't have to pay as much attention to it. As your cost of parts increases, your labor GP will follow. Labor GP, right? It's the easiest thing to control. You can literally look at it on a per part basis, on a per RO basis. You don't have to wait till the end of the month. You don't have to wait for your P&L to find out what your costs are, right? You know it today. So if you're not making your parts gross profit, whatever that needs to be for your business, and again, you know, 55, 60%, I think is well within reason and very doable. We do it every day, more than 60% every day. You have to watch that the closest, right? That's the one that's going to get away quickly and can be corrected instantly. So that's the best one to be watching.
Hey, Carm here. Now, coming up, if we raise our prices, do our employees expect a raise? As much as you love the shop routine you have now, I'll tell you that switching to a cloud-based shop management system will pay off in more ways than you can imagine. Not only will you let go of bad habits that cost you money, you'll free up more time for your techs to fix more cars. Your quotes will be quicker and more accurate, and you'll make more money per part than you ever did before. Hey, we all know time is money, and when you streamline your day, you waste less time on repetitive brain drains. Start fresh by going to your favorite browser and looking up GetShopware.com, and the orange Book a Demo button will set you on a journey for more profit and less stress. You'll never look back on the web at GetShopware.com. Would you ever consider going to a restaurant you've never heard of without first checking the reviews on Google? Well, probably not, right? Now, think about someone who has to bring their car, one of their most valuable possessions, into a shop they haven't heard of. They're probably going to want to read some Google reviews first to make sure that they're going to a reputable place. Broadly is focused on helping auto shops increase their number of reviews on Google. Now, they know that that's one of the best ways to build trust with potential customers and get your business discovered online. Google reviews are going to make you stand out from your competition and get more customers coming into your shop. Trust me, reviews can make all the difference in your business. So what are you waiting for? Get Broadly's system to help prospects have confidence in your shop when they see a large number of five-star reviews. Make the move. Visit Broadly on the web at getbroadly.com/chat and start chatting with a Broadly representative. Learn more on the web at getbroadly.com/chat. I continue to always have a problem with the blockage of the margin on dealer parts. And Dave, you said it nicely. You can buy it. You know, anybody can call a dealer and find out what they'll charge and why am I here. They can call a parts store and find out what they'll charge and that's why I'm here. So if we're buying more from the dealer, then we may have a tighter margin on parts, which doesn't necessarily groom to the 50, 60% margin if we're doing too much. Why do we hesitate to just put that dealer cost into our margins and make a normal margin on it? Dustin, what do you do?
Well, one thing, we have to get rid of this misconception that the dealership suggested retail is what they're selling it to their customer for. So when they call and say, how much is this alternator for my Buick at GM? And they say, oh, I'll sell you that alternator on the counter for $150. Well, if he took the Buick into the GM service department, they would not sell it for $150. They're still the dealerships are getting their margins as well, right? So don't kind of get away from this idea that I can't go over dealer list because that's what the dealership's going to sell the retail customer. That's not correct. And then the other thing too is I think we got to get transform away from the concept of breaking down what that alternator repair cost, right? Well, the labor is 200, the alternator is 200, tax supplies, you're going to be $450, right? No, the alternator replaced is $450. But don't, why do we break it down? Right? Why do you go buy a hamburger and they say the hamburger patty's this much, the lettuce is this much, the bun was this much, and then this is how much I had to pay to make the guy make the hamburger, right? So we get away from a lot of those conversations just by not separating and having that conversation in general. Like the brake job, to do front brakes on your car, pads, rotors out the doors, you know, $375. We just don't break it down for the customer. And we found most customers don't ask, and you know what? They don't care.
Right.
What, how much is it? And when can it be done? That's all they care about. Mm-hmm. And in some states like ours, we do not have to break it down. So we part numbers on the invoice. We don't have the labor charge. We don't have the parts charge. We just have front brake service, pads, rotors, total. We had nothing broken down on the invoice. I think in California, like Dave, I think there's a little more scrutiny on what they can and cannot put on, mm-hmm. on theirs. But we're fortunate in New Mexico currently. Who knows? Currently. We just kind of avoid that topic. Charge what we need to make. And then look at your gross profit for the job instead of trying to break it down. Like, what's our total gross profit for this whole job? Mm-hmm. And where can you play with your numbers to hit that?
When we're discussing the repair with the customer on the phone or on the counter, right? It's just like you said, Dustin, it's just dollars, right? You know, $400 buck out the door. But, you know, we in California, like Dustin said, we have to break things down, parts and labor and fees, and, you know, everything has to be separated out. And we're doing a lot of our estimating. We're emailing the estimate to the customer so they see it, right? It's right there in front of them. They can approve it electronically, so on and so forth. But in the end, they know what the parts cost. And don't get me wrong, we're getting zero pushback, which really surprises me that there's not a lot more of, you know, people shopping, like, you know, looking on Amazon, right? I mean, and we don't have to put part numbers on, I don't put part numbers on the invoice. So they can't search by a brand or part number, but they can certainly look up that particular part for their car. And, you know, and we stress that, you know, every now and again, we'll get that question of how come you're charging me this when I can buy it for this? We talk about, you know, the warranty, the quality, the, you know, the standing behind it. And, you know, the reasoning is part of our business model. You know, we're forced to break it out, but we make money on parts, and that's just the way it is. And if a customer ultimately has a big problem with that, then they can go somewhere else, right? I mean, you know, we're not going to lower our prices based on somebody's objection to our prices.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes they just don't even realize that there are so many other things that go into getting that part even to the shop. Your service advisor has to spend time to get that part in too. You have to keep the lights on. You have to pay the internet, the telephone, all of these other things that go into getting that part in the front door.
I don't think it's true anymore, but it used to be the model was you labor paid your bills and parts made, that's where you made your money, right? Was your profit, right? And I don't think it's good to look at it that way, but that used to be the way that it was kind of structured.
Okay, here's some more stats. Food's up 8.6%. I can't believe that. Eating out's up 6.8%. Clothing's up 6.6%. Can't believe that. And I got a stat that said it's costing an extra $296 or rounded off to $300 per month per household. It seems low to me. About, you know, $35, $3,600 a year. It just seems low. Gas nationally is up $4.33. And before we turned on the recorders, Dave said he's paying five. What, Dave?
$5.37. Was the shop, the gas station around the corner. And that's, you know, that's cash price self serve. So
wow. Oh, okay. Another thing I want to get off my chest as we were talking about prices at the dealership or whatever quote list prices. There is no such thing as the list price police. I just want everybody to know that. I buy it for this. I have to sell it for that. It's a cost of me doing business. It's a discipline of a margin on a part. I'm a carpenter. I buy a tube of silicone at Lowe's, and I pay $239 for it. And I put it on the bill for $5. Okay, I didn't have to go get it. I didn't have to do the job. There's, and again, it goes back to you explaining to your customer why they're paying X for that job. And that is you listing off the value prop that they're there for. And to constantly remind those customers that, you know, let me be the Google for your car, not let Google Google. You come to me and I'll be Google for you. Pick up the phone and says, my car's making a noise over here. Don't Google it.
Right?
Dave Kusa, Google it.
We do.
I want to talk about expenses, Natalie. And to me, I think one of the big ways we can overcome the stress of inflation on our current world today in our business is to pay attention to it. I guarantee you, you're paying more for uniforms. I guarantee you, you're paying more for utilities. Go down the list. If you've got vehicles in the business, if you have loaner cars, guess how much more fuel you're putting in there, you know, cost per gallon. And so I can only imagine sitting down with you, Natalie, going over, you know, the financial statements and taking a look at the stress maybe a business is under and not going line item by line item on the expenses. And then when you figure out what that growth in costs is, Dave, Dustin, it's that $10 or $15 change in the labor rate, right, Natalie?
Yeah, and it can lead to having to adjust either labor rates or parts rates. And, you know, like you said, looking at everything line by line, you know, we can pull different key performance indicator numbers and see if they're on track with that. And we can also compare that data to last year to see what the jump is and what the difference is. And I think David mentioned this in our talking points as far as, okay, maybe it's time to shop around for a different vendor to see if they're going to be able to offer the same thing that we need, you know, at a slightly lower price. And, you know, that does take time and effort, but if it gets down to that, it's got to get down to that. And then, you know, making sure that you are hitting those GP numbers is key.
One of my Dave-isms is you'll never cut expenses to prosperity, but at the same time, right, we have to monitor those expenses closely. So an example, one of my coaching clients is part of a 20 group as well. And some of the other shops, you know, they watch their expenses as a group, right? That's part of that 20 group function. And some of the other shops were, you know, giving my clients a hard time because they were paying, you know, 1.8-2.2% kind of stuff on their credit cards for credit card fees. And they're down in the, you know, in the 1.3s, 1.2s. And why are you paying so much? And so ultimately, yes, right. It's a bigger chunk percentage wise, but we're talking like $50 a month difference, right? Mm-hmm. So is it worth that $50 for the service that you get from the provider of that expense, whatever it might be, whether it's insurance, credit cards, you know, bookkeeping, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, Natalie, I'm sure charges for her services, and I'm sure we could find out there's somebody that's going to charge less than Natalie charges, but are we going to get the service that Natalie's going to provide, right? And, you know, a few extra dollars here and there is oftentimes worth it, right? There's more than just dollars when it comes to expenses.
Yeah, and that's why you raise your labor rate. Natalie, again, I just keep thinking the reason you're here is to, you know, if you will, to land some wise wisdom from a bookkeeper financial perspective. But Dave, Dustin, you know, maybe I don't look at the last 3 months from last year, the last 3 months of last year and the last 3 months of this year. Inflation's really taken a big steep. But maybe I look at my P&L or my expense listing from March of last year, March this year, or, you know, or February, and say, wow, I can't believe it. We didn't do anything different. And look at how much more it costs me to run my business this year versus last year. Well, that's a number you can back into. And if you're billing this many hours of labor, Dave, or at least you want to look at your labor inventory and you say, hey, it's not that difficult for me to cover those costs, there's no better price to get. Yes, you could look all you want and try to reduce your costs, but you got to make it up by raising your prices. And who's to say that because you go to a cheaper price on a service that you're going to get the same value, Dave? Absolutely 100% right. You may want to pay a couple of extra dollars because you're so super happy with what you're getting. Charge your customer. That's what everybody else is doing to us as consumers. We're paying for the same, if not less, levels of service. Dustin, agree or disagree?
I agree 100% with David. You know, we can use the uniform example, right? I look at it like tripping over dollars to pick up dimes. Mm-hmm. So you're going to save $50 a month, changing the uniform company. You're going to spend, I don't know how many hours getting that done, you know, sizing them, looking at new contracts. You're spending a lot of time there, right? Yes, we need to be aware of expenses and keep an eye out for anything drastic that changes. But I think there's more important things you need to be focusing on during these troubling kind of times that we have, right? We'll probably talk about this a little later. It's like your employees, right? How much more is it going to cost you to replace an employee because you're over there messing around with uniforms and you don't have your ear to the ground and this guy's looking to jump ship and then he jumps ship. And who cares about the $50 you just saved? You just cost yourself a lot of money not kind of having your thumb on the pulse on what how your employees are feeling, how they're handling the situation.
I wanted to move into that topic, Dustin. Thank you for this wonderful segue into talking about our people and what are we going to do to pay attention to their needs.
It is kind of a fine balance, just like what we were talking about with expenses, as far as, okay, we might have to pay them more, but I also am starting to see a trend and people don't necessarily see as what they're getting paid as the number one contributing factor. They're looking at things of non-monetary benefits. Does the shop have a good culture? Do we all kind of operate as a family? Do we feel appreciated and cared for? And those are important things that can really help with employee retention. And just to kind of get away from the numbers of, okay, well, I'm just going to give everybody a raise so that we can keep up with inflation. So it is kind of trying to find that mix between paying them well, but also making sure that they feel welcome in that culture.
Pay is important. Money is important. Most people, especially technicians, they're not necessarily monetarily driven, right? Everybody needs to get a fair wage, right? And so they can live and survive. And as the prices of things go up, we have to look to make sure that our team, our greatest asset, which is our employees, are able to stay ahead of the game. And that's just, you know, it's very inflationary, right? Right. The prices go up. So, but regardless of that, right, my team is great and I value them. I tell them I value them. I show them I value them. We have a good, strong culture in our shop. My clients, you know, that's something that we work on all the time to make sure that, that our people are valued and feel valued and want to come to work and be at the shop they're at. One of my clients just hired a technician that starts today, coming out of a very toxic situation, and is taking actually less money to make the change. Clearly for this person, peace of mind and a happy place to work is more important than the strict amount of money that he was being paid where he was. So if we look at how we treat our customers and clients and how we want them to treat us, you know, most people, when they're interviewed about what do they value on getting their car fixed, price is usually fourth, fifth, sixth on the list, mm-hmm. right? Unless until something goes wrong, then it's number one. But, you know, we have as shop owners, we have this conception the price is the most important thing to our customers, our clients. And it isn't necessarily the way that is. And so it's the same with our people, right? What they're getting paid isn't necessarily the most important thing to them.
Hey, we recently put out an episode on employee benefits, and I would love for you to go there if you're loving what we're doing here, important employee benefits. We talked about a range, guys, of so many of the things that we're talking about here. And I want to ask this team this important question. If I raise my labor rate, do my people expect a raise?
I think it goes the other way, right? And to answer your question directly, no. But I think that is a conversation you have with your team. We sat down some time back, and I've done it with a number of my clients on, you know, let's call it $150 an hour labor rate just to keep a number round. And, you know, where does that $150 go? Right. You know, if I'm the technician and I'm getting $40 an hour, you know, the boss is putting $110 in his pocket. Well, no. Right. We have to talk about those expenses and those benefits and those costs and why we need net profit at the end of the day. Hey, boss, I need to update the scanner. Well, sorry, we don't have it wasn't in our budget and we don't have net profit. We can't do it. Right. The compressor breaks. right? Nobody probably doesn't have a compressor in their budget unless they had planned for it, right? So when the compressor breaks and now you can't use your air tools, somebody's got to find five, six, seven, 10 grand to replace that compressor. So there better be net profit to do it. Otherwise, you know, you're financing and paying, which is okay, right? I mean, you can't necessarily write a $10,000 check, but you better be able to write a $1,000 a month check to make those payments. So we have to have those conversations with our team on where the money goes and why it's important to be productive and why it's important to make sure that that can of brake clean gets on the repair order and those nuts and bolts got on the repair order, right? That I call it profit leakage. And it's, you know, it's a dollar here, a dollar there, but, you know, come the end of the day, $50 is $50, right? And multiply that times every day. If we're letting that happen and our team doesn't understand why it's important for it not to happen, it will continue. And, you know, then you have that animosity too. Like you said, Carm, you know, they just raised the labor rate 20% and I'm not getting any more money. Well, it's because everything else went up.
I was going to circle back to that earlier conversation about your culture. Okay, so a lot of this dissipates if you have a good culture, right? These guys know we got to make money, got to be profitable. The company's got to be profitable so they can maintain their job. So I think a lot of it does have to be with culture, and your honesty and openness to your guys, is that embedded in your culture? Do they understand what's going on? Do they understand what we're working for? Do they understand your vision, where you're trying to go, where we're trying to go with the company? And it can't be, I'm trying to run this company so that I can have a mansion on the hill and three Lamborghinis in my yard, right? You're not going to get anybody to buy into that. Having a shared vision that people can buy into and understand, and then developing trust within your organization and trust within your leadership team. I think a lot of that kind of helps sidestep a lot of those conversations, or at least opens the door to where they feel comfortable having those conversations with you on a one-on-one level if they have something that comes up relating to their pay.
Being that open and honest and building that trust is, I honestly, and this might be a little bit of a touchy subject, but I encourage people to kind of be open about their finances with their team. Like Dave was saying, tell them where all of this money is going, because then you don't have to have those animosity conversations. And I even do that within my own company. They know exactly where every business, every dollar is going, how much I'm getting paid, how much they're getting paid, how much is coming in. It kind of keeps us all working together as a team towards that shared vision that you were talking about, Dustin.
We did a show back in February of 2021, and it was called Where the Money Goes. And it's the $100 lesson. And I remember doing this for years when I worked for corporate America, but it was Patrick McHugh who actually did it. And he came on the show. It was just me and him. And here's the graphic. It's Town Hall Academy 210. And if you actually go to the website and just type in 210 in the reference and get it, you'll actually see some screenshots. And I think we even have a download of a PDF that basically shows how you show your people where this $100 sale is. And then here's the gross margin, and here's where we pay our bills from, and here's all the expenses, and then here is a net operating income number. You know, that's where the earthquake tremor comes in, when your team is in front of you and you're sharing this, and they go, oh my God, Dave doesn't make $1.3 million a year. I just can't believe it. Oh my God, he's lucky to make $50,000. How is he living? And so I think that's one of the best episodes to watch as an owner, and then do your own version of it and sit with your people. Because, Dustin, it goes back to everything you were saying about, is the culture right in the business so that we all respect what it takes to be gainfully employed and love each other and love our customers and work together for the common good of safety and reliability for our customers. That's why we're here.
I would take that one step further with, you know, the episode you just talked about. Great episode. I remember it. So take the $100 lesson, plug your numbers in, right? I mean, you know, because we're looking at those percentages. Percentages are percentages, right? But you know, how much in gross sales do we need to do to meet our profitability goals, right? And build it out that way. And then it's true to the team, right? You know, the concept of the $100 lesson is perfect, but our numbers, right, are incredible when the team understands what they are. And it was a pretty interesting exercise when we did it, because it was an aha for me too. It's, you know, we were looking at, you know, here's our gross sales. You know, here's our parts labor mix. Here's our expenses, and here's where it all comes out in the end. And it's like, so and I can see the eyes getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's like, because we're not hitting those sales numbers, right? This is 18 months ago in the middle of COVID, right? So we're not doing it. We got to get there. How do we get there, right? But it's like, for us to hit these numbers, what do you think your productivity needs to be? And they're like, I don't know, 65%. You need to be 65% to hit these numbers. Can you do that? Yeah, that's easy, right? So, it was very revealing on that.
It's a great tool to not only teach something that they just don't know about, but to gain the buy-in, Dave, that everything is doable. To your point, Dave, about taking it to the next step, way back when I was doing this, we'd not only do the $100 sale, and then every category, I had an envelope of the dollars that were in it. So if payroll was $25.38, there was an envelope of payroll with $25.38 in it. It was stuck to a chair underneath. And so when people would come in the room, I would get ready to do this exercise, and I'd say, turn over your chair and see if there's an envelope there. So wherever they sat, they got the envelope. And as we went down the expense listing, the person with the gross margin, what we paid our parts bill, that was the biggest envelope. And the next was, for example, payroll. And we gave the money to our people. Now, you weren't going to put up your real numbers and put that real money in an envelope. But the $100 sale was. And then what I did is I showed $100,000 and then I showed $1 million. And yes, the numbers as a percentage were the same, but then you could start seeing the chunk of the number, how big the numbers were. And then if you're prepared at that time to share your real numbers with your people, then that is, if you will, the icing on the cake. And again, maybe this lesson, Natalie, Dustin, and Dave, it's a perfect time now. We're under the greatest stress we've ever been with inflation, with hiring people, with retaining people. What we need to do this financial exercise so that people can be on your team stronger than they've ever been before to find this financial freedom in growing the right profit in the company.
Agreed. And something pops into mind you just reminded me of something, Carm. As things become more expensive, we, as conscientious people, when we do it anyway, right? We want to be able to make the repairs to the vehicles, the services to the vehicles, as cost effective as possible, right? Still be profitable, but get it done at the best price we can for our customers. So perhaps as the cost of parts goes up, we may be tempted to buy a less expensive part to save the customer money. We'll still go through our matrix. We'll still get our gross profit percentage on parts, but our gross profit dollars go down. And while we have to pay attention to percentages, because that's the best way to compare things over, month to month, year to year, dollars is what pays bills. The utility company isn't going to take 0.2% of your net, of your gross profit percentage. They're going to take 0.2% of your gross profit dollars. So we have to make sure that the dollars are there as well and avoid that temptation to, be the nice guy and try and save somebody money and just end up cutting our own throats.
And Dave just said it. And if there's any takeaway that you can take from this, and that is that you pay bills with gross profit dollars, not percent. And so we can continue to buy the lowest cost of everything and still throw it through our matrix and end up with less dollars to pay the bills that happen to be rising. So I know you want to save your customer some money. It's my second car. I'm not sure what we're going to do. Can you help me out on this one, Dave? And sure, you do that. But you can't do it for every transaction. If not, you're going to end up saying, where's the money at the end of the month? Where's the money? I need money to pay my bills. Hey, Dustin, I want to cover one final point that you brought up to me. And that was, Dustin tells me, a recent Gallup study shows that 50% of all employees are thinking about changing jobs. And if we need to pay attention right now in this crazy world we're into, and that is to retain our people.
Absolutely. Don't think that's not your guys, too. And they're not, they call it the great resignation, but they're calling it now the great reset. Right? Because people aren't quitting and going on unemployment. They're just reevaluating what success looks like and what their careers look like moving forward. With that in mind, I'm doing a big meeting with all my managers and leaders in the back. We're talking culture. We're talking accountability. What's our culture look like? How are we maintaining our culture? The people in our company are the reasons why we are where we're at now, right? So just be aware of that, guys. And as this cost is changing, people are not, your employees aren't seeing 8%. They keep saying 8%, but nobody sees 8%. I don't know why, because you could buy a boat for the same price back then that you could buy it now. I really think that number is much higher. You know, I mean, gas last year was $2 a gallon. It's $4 a gallon. That's not 8%, right? Pay attention to your guys. Know that they might be leaving and they might be thinking about it, and you want to know. Have a staying interview with them instead of an exit interview. How do you feel about where you're working right now? Are you thinking about leaving? Ask them. What can I do to make your job better? And just like Dave put and Natalie both mentioned, it's not always about the money, guys. It's about feeling like they're a part of something special. Mm-hmm. Another good thing to think about is I recently was in a training class. They talked about first time in the history that the workforce has five generations of people working in it. Your traditionalists, baby boomers, Generation X, millennial, now the youngest generation, Generation Z. So how you manage somebody who's a baby boomer is not how you're going to manage somebody who's a Generational Z person. The baby boomer, what they find important in life and their definition of success does not line up with a 26-year-old. So do some research into that and think about that when you're thinking about your people mm-hmm. that you're dealing with, the people in your workforce that you have. What motivates them? What are they looking for in success? And what are they looking for for a career? And the last thing that's really important, I think, is the increase in boomerang employees is up higher than ever. And that is someone who leaves your organization and then comes back. So when you lose somebody, don't burn that bridge, especially if it's somebody you think will come back and be even better than they were when they left. They might be leaving to go look for opportunities somewhere, some training stuff to expand their knowledge or whatever. It's not always that they left you because they don't like your company. They may go somewhere else and go, man, working for Dave was great. Why did I ever leave there? Hey, Dave, are you going to take me back, buddy? And then you take them back and then they stay with you for 10, 15 years after that. So a lot of the changes in the employees and just in the workforce and how we manage people. So we just, you know, stay diligent, keep teaching yourself, learning things, and try to stay ahead of some of the issues that we're facing that are the post COVID yet, but these post COVID employee issues that we have.
Very good. Dustin, thank you for it. I'm going to call that your last word. And my big takeaway was to have a retention interview, but don't let it look so formal. Just, hey, come on into the office. Let's talk about you, your family, what's going on. You know, let's talk about inflation, the workplace, our culture, training. I mean, you bring it all up and you don't have to call it anything, but, you know, it's time we caught up. Spend some time. You can call it a retention interview, but your employees shouldn't. They should just feel like, hey, Dustin and I were hanging out, and it felt good to hang out. Natalie, I'll give you your last word. Is there anything on your talking points that we didn't cover that you'd love to bring up?
I mean, I think we've covered a wide gamut, and I'm really interested to see how this conversation really transformed into just talking about numbers and inflation into a culture and employee retention conversation, because it's a big one. It doesn't matter what kind of business we run. It's a big one.
And I'm not surprised that it did, because it seems to me that the top shop operators in our country all rely on the strength of their culture and their team. Dave, you got the last word.
Thank you. Yeah. And agreeing with what everybody says, can't stress that retention culture, positive attitude type of business more than ever, because you know, we all know good quality people, technicians, advisors, managers, almost impossible to find, harder than ever, right? I mean, I thought with COVID that with shops closing or cutting back that we would, you know, kind of loosen that noose a little bit. It's tighter than ever. So and somebody out there will entice your best people away with more money as this inflation grows, because they're desperate for people too. So as Dustin said, got to keep in touch with our people, make sure we know what's going on and what we need to do to make sure that we retain them.
Hey guys and lady, wonderful stuff. Thank you so much. As we talked about paying attention to inflation, and as all Town Hall Academies, they just seem to find their own legs and go places we particularly never expected them to go. Thank you so much, Dave Kusa, Auto Trend Diagnostics, Campbell, California, past president of ASCCA and part-time coach with the ACT Group. Natalie Perez, Three Rivers Bookkeeping, profit strategist, worked for many years in our industry. Thanks for being here. And Dustin Brown, Brown's Auto Experts, three locations in New Mexico. That would be Albuquerque, Village of Los Ranchos, and Rio Rancho. Thanks for being here, everyone.
Thanks, Carl.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.